Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. I'm always looking to help the Next Level Soul audience take their soul to the next level. And I've been able to partner with Mind Valley to present you guys with a ton of free masterclasses between 60 and 90 minutes covering mind, body, soul, relationships, and conscious entrepreneurship. Some of these masterclasses are taught by spiritual masters, relationship experts, best-selling authors, legends in the personal growth and spirituality space, and so much more. So if you want to sign up for any of our free mind, body, and soul masterclasses, just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/free. Now, I know there's a lot of information out there about what to eat, what not to eat, what's healthy for you, what's not healthy for you. Well, today's guest is nationally recognized as a nutrition expert. His name is Dr. John McDougall, and he is a board-certified internist and author of 13 national best-selling books and co-founder of the McDougall Program. He has dedicated over 50 years of his life caring for people with diet and lifestyle medicine. And Dr. McDougall and I have a very raw and honest conversation about diet, about the best food for you, the healthiest diet that you can eat to maintain your body on your spiritual path. So let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. John McDougall. How are you doing, John?
Hey, I'm doing really good. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been a fan of yours ever since I saw you so many years ago in a very instrumental documentary that kind of changed my life, which was Forks Over Knives, which is one of the first documentaries that came out talking about a plant-based diet and the science behind it and so on. And after I saw that documentary, it started me down the path. But I know you'd been talking about it a few years prior to that movie. Yeah. So how did you get started on your plant-based journey?
Well, 1977, I would date, you know, my efforts. And that's when I was finishing up my residency. Mm-hmm. I'm a board-certified medical doctor, board-certified internist. And I'd just gone through an amazing experience. I was a sugar plantation doctor on the Big Island of Hawaii. It changed my life. After my internship, Mary and I decided we were going to spend some more time in Hawaii. And so we went to the Big Island. And there I worked as a sugar plantation doctor, which doesn't mean anything to any of you, I know. But my job was to take care of 5,000 people who worked on the sugar plantation. I did everything for them. And I caught their babies. I pronounced them dead in the middle of the night. I did brain surgery on them when it was necessary. I did basically everything, and taught me a couple things. One, it taught me what a lousy doctor I was, because my patients didn't get better. Those with chronic disease, they did not get better, just like every doctor's patients with chronic diseases. You know, those with obesity, high blood pressure, cancer, heart disease, diabetes. You know, doctors these days, they just kind of manage the problem, and that's almost 45 years later. But I discovered that when you manage disease, you get lousier results. You have sick people who get a bunch of excuses and hands full of pills and once in a while get operated on. I didn't feel good about being that kind of doctor. I couldn't see any real change in my patients. I spent 3 years watching people. I knew they should get better. You know, I'd watched Ben Casey, Dr. Kildare, and Marcus Welby. I know what a real doctor's supposed to do, and I wasn't doing it. Mm-hmm. The other experience I had during this 3 years as sugar plantation doctor between 1973 and 1976, is I was able to take care of people who ate differently. I was taking care of first, second, third, and fourth generation Filipinos, Japanese, Chinese, Koreans. And these people coming from the first generation, what they were is people that learned a starch-based diet, a diet of rice in most cases, when they lived in their native land of the Philippines, China, Japan, Korea. that's what they learned when they were kids. And then they moved to the Big Island of Hawaii and started a new life on a sugar plantation. And they kept their diet of rice and vegetables. They were remarkable in their health and their longevity. And their kids, who were born in Hawaii, second generation, they were influenced by Western eating patterns. And we had Texas Drive-In, the home of the Malasada, right up the street from our plantation. And the first McDonald's came to Hilo, Hawaii back in about 1974. I was one of their first and best customers, by the way. Anyway, people were influenced, my patients were influenced. And here you have a situation where you're looking at the same genetics, the same kind of work they've been doing for 100 years. And the only thing that had changed is their food. And my second generation got more overweight, more sick. By the time I got to the third generation, I was looking at some of the fattest, sickest people on the planet because they enthusiastically picked up the Western diet. So after 3 years as a sugar plantation doctor, I went back into training, became a board certified internist. And I practiced standard medical care for patients for the next few years. You know, I had to put food on the table. I had to make a living. But eventually I got to a point in about 1985 where I no longer had to do that. I could just dedicate my life as a doctor to helping people get better by fixing the problem, which is the food. And so that's the practice I started in about 1985. And I've continued that up until recently. I went back into training, as I mentioned, I became a board certified internist. So I know everything the other internists know. And I set up a practice and did very well. Got a big reputation in Hawaii and started writing books. And pretty soon I got an invitation from St. Helena Hospital in the Napa Valley to come and head one of their programs on diet and lifestyle. They're a Seventh-day Adventist hospital. So I was welcomed there and I spent 16 years taking care of over 3,000 people by changing their diet, taking them off pills, you know, getting them well. And then I left St. Helena Hospital under good terms and I moved to Santa Rosa, California, which is where my home was, just a valley over from the Napa Valley. And there I set up a resort-based practice, which I ran for 18 years.
Wow.
Where people came from all over the world. I had a chance to personally take care of more than 3,000 people in this setting. And then as life changed for so many people, then we had the COVID epidemic, the COVID-19 epidemic come and changed our lives back in 2020. And I could no longer run a live-in program. People couldn't travel. The resort closed. I mean, I was in big trouble as far as the business model goes. And what I did is I adapted to the circumstances and I set up the most effective practice that I've ever even imagined. I set up a telehealth practice where we were able to take people from China, Korea, South America, all over the world and deliver for them medical care, enough medical care for them to get off their drugs and to teach them and to watch them, give them support. And we run a 12-day internet-based program. And it's more effective than any of the programs I've ever run before. We get better results with people. Everybody's happier. The cost was reduced by about 2/3. And so if you want to learn about the program, you can go to my website, which is drmcdougall.com. But that's how I began with the onset of climate change, which has been since 2006 when Al Gore told us that we're burning in hell by the activities we were doing. And as of 2004, I had my first grandchild. And so that came out in 2006, Al Gore's proclamation, but he didn't mention anything about diet. He didn't mention that animal agriculture made the biggest contribution.
Correct.
But the FAO of the United Nations, they did make a statement in that same year, 2006. They wrote Livestock's Long Shadow, where they said that 18% of the greenhouse gases come from animal agriculture. And they compared it to all transportation, which was fewer than 14%. So it kind of woke people up. And then we had the World Watch Institute that took their data. You know, it's a 400-page report, The Livestock's Long Shadow. Mm-hmm. And they took their data and they reworked it, included things that should have been included. And they estimated that 51%, at least 51% of the greenhouse gases were from animal agriculture. Now, since there's been estimates as high as 87% are due to animal agriculture, 87% of the greenhouse planet warming gases. And anyway, I've dedicated myself ever since then to trying to get people aware and dedicated instead of my life to, you know, the usual run-of-mill average overweight sick patient. I took on every day, I took on a new patient, and that new patient is planet Earth. I hope to make a contribution just like I did in nutrition. You know, doctors practice different than they did before my time. Mm-hmm. I like to think that I made a contribution to the more modern way of practicing, understand that diet is the cause of most of our diseases. And with a simple change to a traditional diet, I talk about it as a traditional diet these days because I want to get as many people involved as possible. I don't talk about it as a vegan diet, but it is. I don't talk about it as the McDougal diet, but it is. I talk about it as a traditional diet. So that people at home with grandma and grandpa, and certainly a heritage, can relate to what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the diet that grandma and grandpa still eat. If they're from Asia, they eat a diet based on rice, probably. If they're from South America, say the Andes, their ancestors lived and still live today on potatoes.
Well, let me ask you a question, because you have a book called The Starch Solution. Uh-huh. You know, we've been in the West told that starches are bad and you shouldn't eat so many because you're going to get too many carbs and so on and so forth. Many people on the show know I'm plant-based and I have been for over a decade now. And it really has changed my health outlook and things like that. But, you know, even within the plant-based diet, there's still unhealthy vegans who are just starchitarians, quote unquote, starchitarians, who are just eating pasta. And look, Oreo cookies are vegan.
There's a lot of misinformation.
Exactly.
There's a chapter in that book, The Starch Solution, called The Fat Vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a chapter that was designed to call people who are already concerned about diet, animal rights, and the planet, to call them to action. The problem is the way they look, their personal appearances getting in the way of their ability to communicate. And so, you know, my effort bringing out the fat vegan has been very positive, no negative response. So yeah, you're right. But the idea that starches are fattening flies in the face of everything we know.
Okay.
Like, for example, I started talking to you about traditional diets. The Aztecs and Mayans, they were known as the people of the corn. Excuse me, corn is a starch. The Native Americans, at least 12,000 years ago, in the Southwest United States, the Native Americans were living on corn. You know, as I mentioned, the Incas lived on potatoes. What we're focusing on now in terms of the planet is a place called Ukraine. And we have been focusing on Iran, Iraq, and Egypt. They used to be known as the breadbasket of the world. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, you know, up until say 50 or at most 150 years ago, everybody who walked this planet lived on a starch-based diet, except for kings and queens and aristocrats.
Who were fat.
Well, yeah, they were overweight, sick, because they gave up the starches, instead fed them to animals, and then ate the animals. And that, of course, is what's happened to the world. In the last 50 years, we've changed from a planet where undernutrition was the problem to a planet where overnutrition is the problem.
I understand what you're saying, but all those examples are of people who moved a lot. I mean, they're every day, they were constantly moving, constantly exercising. So in a sedentary lifestyle that we, unfortunately, many of us live, what, you know, it has to be a balance as well, correct?
Let's think about the priests, the ministers, the teachers.
Sure.
I mean, not everybody moved a lot.
Okay.
A lot of people moved just like we do. And there were no overweight people, none, period, zero, until they changed to a rich diet. So your observation, I would say, is one that leads people to overlook the importance of diet. They say, "Well, it's probably something else, probably genetics." And
oh no,
you know, maybe it's they didn't get enough exercise. Excuse me, the number of overweight people out there trying to solve the problem by walking or running is almost all of them, and they're not solving it. And all you have to do is fix the food, and I don't care how much you exercise, you'll get to trim body weight.
So let me ask you a question. What are some misconceptions of plant-based diets? Because, of course, the question I get asked all the time, the protein. Where are you going to get? Oh my God. Where are you going to get the protein? I tell people, I just go out in my front yard and I graze. That's generally how I eat. And they start laughing. I goes, because at a certain point, I get so ridiculous about protein. There's protein in pretty much everything. I'm not protein, lack of protein over the last 10 years.
You have never, nor has any of your listening audience ever met a person who suffered from protein deficiency. It doesn't exist.
Right.
In the entire world history, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist today. So you can start there by misinformation. You can also go on to something I'm sure you would have told me about in just a minute. The fact that the biggest animals in the world live on plant-based diets, elephants, hippopotamuses.
Right. Right.
You know, if you can grow an elephant on, you know, grasses and whatever they eat, you can grow a puny little human being, I would think. Anyway, of all the nutrients that I could pick on, you know, there's the misinformation about starches we just got into. Of all the misinformation, all the harm done to people and the planet, it's the myth that protein is the most important nutrient.
Right.
You know, my parents believed that. They believed that all they had to do was make sure that their children got enough calcium and protein. And so we had a lot of meat, a lot of dairy, et cetera, to keep us from being protein or to keep us from being nutrient deficient. Even though there's no such thing as calcium deficiency, there's no such thing as protein deficiency because of the education from industry. They were misguided and they taught me a diet that again changed my life. It was in a different way. I was a very sickly young man and a child. I had terrible stomach pains, terrible constipation. I was at the last of the pack when it came to running. And when I was 18 years old, I had a massive stroke. And still today, I walk around with a limp 55 years later. So that opened my eyes as far as the correct diet goes. And then I had the fortune of that plantation experience. So, you know, I've earned the right to talk to people about what a bad diet one focused on protein and calcium can do to them. I've suffered. But here I am. I'm in my mid-70s now. And alive and well, but I was almost dead at 18. And wow. I would have been dead at 30 if I hadn't corrected my misinformed days.
Well, right now I've heard there's been so much talk now that something that's coming into the zeitgeist is the importance of the microbiome and the gut health, that really most of our health comes from a healthy gut. If you have a sick gut, right, your immune system goes down, everything. The plant-based diet is a perfect diet for a healthy microbe.
That's exactly the bottom line.
Like with eating of vegetables and eating of greens and things, it just creates a really great microbiome, correct?
Absolutely. Bad bacteria that promote cancer and heart disease and all kinds of different human problems. Bad bacteria love to eat meat and they love to eat dairy products. And so what you feed them depends upon which ones grow. Healthy bacteria, which are coliforms, they love to eat starch. They love sugar, just like human beings love sugar. So you just change your diet and you always fix the problem of the microbiome of the bacteria in your bowel. It always happens because you stop feeding. You stop feeding the bad bacteria, you feed the good ones and they hang around.
Now,
there's an interesting subpopulation that this whole microbiome issue is focusing on. And that's the rural Africans. And the rural Africans are known as a population, and I've talked about them extensively, as people who had no heart disease, no diabetes, no breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, no hemorrhoids, up until they learned the Western diet, up until about 1980 when everything changed. And there are still some rural Africans around, and what they've been doing is studying the poop of Africans. Mm-hmm. And I could just see someday soon they're going to be selling the African poop as a solution to the problem in little pills. Well, that may be fine for, you know, a few days, but they're going to stop growing unless you feed them right. You got to feed them the African diet so they stick around. And the Africans lived on a starch-based diet, you know, root vegetables and millet. Mm-hmm. You know, these days, corn was a big part of their diet.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
So it comes down to very simple. There are a couple of things that I try and teach my patients, because I still teach patients. One is there are two food poisons. Now, I don't want to make it complicated for them. That's two food poisons that they have to give up to save themselves. And those food poisons are animals, animal tails, animal ears, animal lips, animal butts, whatever, and the secretion of animals, milk, cheese, et cetera. So here you have one category of poisoning that you can easily identify. And the other category of poisoning is oil, free oil, something that doesn't occur in nature. It occurs naturally in the food and then it's safe. But if you put it in a bottle and you call it safflower oil, corn oil, flaxseed oil, it's toxic. It really is one of the most poisonous things we come in contact with. So you got two food poisons, and unfortunately, most of your audience now, they go, there's nothing left to eat. Mm-hmm. That's all I eat, animals and oils. Well, there is, and I have to open your world to starch so that you have an understanding about what to eat. You go, wow, starch? Wow. I was told starches are bad for me. I love starch. I see a plate of spaghetti with marinara sauce over it. Oh, I go, comfort food. The appealing foods with color, texture, flavor, aroma, they're your starches, vegetables, and fruits. You can't get people to eat animals unless you cook them, right. Unless you throw a lot of salt on them or sugar on them or cover them up with steak sauce. Otherwise, they're unpalatable for a simple reason. That is that they're not the food for people. But naturally, you're attracted to sweet potatoes, bread, pasta, corn, because that's your food. Industry's lying to you. That's plain and simple. Why are they lying to you? Because they want to make money, just like every other human being does. They want to make money. So what they do is they do something called unique positioning. They tell you something that's unique about their products or you'll buy into it, whether it's true or not. Like, for example, when I say protein, you say meat or maybe eggs. And I say calcium. They educated you. Your reflex, your response is dairy products. I say omega-3 fats.
Think fish.
You say fish. I mean, sure. Excuse me, I've already told you there's no such thing as protein or calcium deficiency ever reported in the world literature. And no fish has ever made an omega-3 fat. Just can't do it. Only plants can desaturate at the carbon-3 position. So, we live with so many bits of information that are just plain lies, but innocent lies in the sense that all they're trying to do is sell you more cheese and meat and fish and so on.
And they don't really care too much about your health.
Okay. But it's not a conspiracy.
No, of course.
Because if it was a conspiracy, they would whisper in their wife's ear or their child's ear, don't listen to what I'm saying.
Right.
They save their own families, and their own families are just as fat, just as sick as the rest of us. And they're dying at rampant rates. The government officials, dietitians, doctors, people in farmyards, they just plain and simple don't know. And so it's not a conspiracy. It's just making money. That's it. Just what people do. They make money.
Now, I'm assuming you've heard of things called lectins in the creation of leaky gut. What are the foods that create those lectins? Is it something we should worry about?
No, it's nothing you should worry about. Lectins are part of the plant process so that they defend themselves against various enemies, microbes, funguses, etc. So it's part of the defense mechanism of plants. And the idea that you have to be afraid of lectins is an idea that's created, which is, maybe based on a couple of crackpot theories that people have cherry-picked to death and sold a few books about. But it doesn't get away from the basic facts is people are starch eaters, always have been, always will be. Starches are, our lectins are in like beans and grains and so on. You'll find a new theory every week.
Right.
That is intended to sell books, sell food products. And people like to hear these new theories. Finally, I figured out why I'm sick and overweight. This new miracle idea. Well, excuse me. If you took and opened your eyes just a minute, mm-hmm. like I had a chance to do as a sugar plantation doctor. You see that, you look at populations of people around the world or throughout history who lived on starch-based diets. They're always trim.
They don't that's the thing I always wonder, because I mean, I know that the Chinese, I mean, they eat white rice in every meal. And apparently white rice is bad for you because it's not whole grain rice or brown rice.
Again, it's a distraction.
Sure.
Brown rice is better. Let's face it, it's better. Mm-hmm. But the Asian eats white rice because that's what clean people do. Dirty people eat brown rice. That's a whole social thing.
Sure.
But before 1980, in China, there was virtually no overweight problems and no type 2 diabetes. Today in China, reported in 2013 and many other recent articles, 12% of the population of China is frankly diabetic and half are pre-diabetic. That's what's happened since 1980, in the last 40 plus years.
Because of the Western diet.
Well, yeah, you know, we have cable news network and everybody wants to be like an American. We have transportation systems that allow us to sell our poisons all over the world. And but believe me, people around the world, they've listened carefully. And you can see it in the way that people look. I mean, traditionally, you think about Hispanic people being trim and hardworking and healthy. And boy, oh boy, some of the worst cases of diabetes are among this population of people. There was a time that Blacks were, the hardworking people who toiled in the fields. Mm-hmm. They're always trim. But they learned the Western diet. And, they have some of the highest rate of prostate cancer, high blood pressure, obesity, breast cancer.
Latinos as well. I'm a Latino, and Latinos as well. I was raised with black beans, white rice.
Right.
That standard meal.
Grandpa was healthy.
Grandpa was not a big man, but grandpa was a strong, very, very strong man. And at the end, towards the last 15, 20 years, he barely ate any meat because his stomach couldn't handle it anymore, couldn't process it after all the abuse that he might have had with meat early on in his life. Are you familiar with it? I'm assuming you're familiar with the China study.
Oh, yeah. T. Colin Campbell is a good friend of mine.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure, I can. T. Colin Campbell, he wrote a book called The China Study, which was declared by the New York Times to be the best epidemiologics ever done. Mm-hmm. Still stands that way today. What T. Colin Campbell did with his research group in the cooperation of the Chinese government is he looked around at various populations of people in China and found that they ate quite a bit differently. Some ate a diet of 40% fat. At the other extreme, they ate a diet with no added fat, and that's 7% fat. And what he found was there's a straight line correlation between the foods people eat, specifically the fat they eat, and their chance of getting diabetes or breast cancer or heart disease. And so Dr. Campbell there are many other things that man has done to cause him fame that he deserves, but the China study is only one of them. And he's been out there on the road trying to tell people the truth. And the truth is the Chinese used to be really healthy. Well, they had the other problems. You had sanitation problems. They had accidents and no hospitals. But we don't have to give up all the advantages that we've discovered through technology. Like hospital systems, sanitation, and antibiotics. And we don't have to give those up. But all we have to do, if we want all the health we deserve, is we have to add old knowledge back to what we're doing. And that is old knowledge. I can take you back thousands of years. Old knowledge says when you eat the diet of aristocrats, it goes back thousands of years. The aristocrats were obese. They had gout in their feet. They had diabetes. They had birth defects related to eating all that meat. Mm-hmm. It's old knowledge, but it's easily forgotten when you have billions of dollars of advertisements on your television and your radio that tell you that we finally figured it out. You just need to eat a lot of protein. But sir, I've never seen a case of protein deficiency. Well, I know, but you still need to eat a lot of protein. Why? Because that's what we sell.
So can you talk a little bit about processed foods versus non-processed foods?
Well, yes, I think, this opens a big category. When you switch from brown rice to white rice, it's not a deal breaker. It's not ideal. So that much processing seems to work okay. I mean, as I say, there are 2 billion Asians who up until 1980 were really strong and healthy on white rice. So that's a level of processing. Then you get a level of processing where, they just change everything. throw a bunch of oil in the food, a bunch of animals in the food, and so on. A bunch of sugar. I'm not trying to tell you sugar is health food. It's not, but it's not one of the major poisons. So better to have unprocessed food. Well, okay. Well, should you eat all raw food? That's the ultimate in unprocessed. No, you shouldn't. The human being is a cooked starch eater. Mm-hmm. So if we go from that, we go from cooked starches to adulterating these cooked starches, then you run into more and more problems. But again, I didn't list lack of fiber or addition of sugar or salt to the two food poisons that you have to recognize and get out of your life. Those two food poisons are animal foods and free oils. And what you need to add back is starch. I would prefer you add back unprocessed starch. You're going to have to do better. But, you know, a little bit of damage to the food goes a long way. The human being is tough. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about how resilient the human being is? I think about it a lot, particularly in my younger years. I've tested it. You know, the human being will put up with two packs of cigarettes a day, a third of a bottle of whiskey a day, and hot dogs wrapped in bacon every day. I tested it. I'm alive. So, you know, small indiscretions are not a big deal. You need to get the major things fixed. You know, not that you should go on to bad habits. I hope nobody misunderstands what I'm having to say. I'm trying to be clear.
There's also genetics there too. I saw this on documentary. This guy was 110 or 105 and he was smoking and drinking. He's like, don't do what I do. And he was
people love to hear those stories because
of course
they hear good news about their bad habits.
Of course. But it's not the case.
Well, likely I'll tell you what I found is these people who do smoke cigarettes, they don't smoke many or inhale them. Like my great grandma lived to be 106. She'd have wine, but just on Christmas.
Yeah.
And when she'd eat the rich Western diet, I remember a time we spent together, she sent me out for a burger. And I came home with this burger, you know where it came from. It was wrapped in a yellow paper. Mm-hmm. And she cut it in quarters. Now, she was always worried about me growing up because she thought I ate too much meat. On this particular incidents when we were together, she was 103. And she took that hamburger, one quarter of it, and she shook it in my face. And she said, you know, Johnny, if you'd eat more meat, you'd be healthier. And then she proceeded to eat two halves and put the rest away for later. Good grief. At that same restaurant, I ordered two double cheeseburgers, a couple of shakes, and a order of fries. Mm-hmm. So moderation plays in a lot when you're talking about people who seem to escape the obvious. Is they certainly don't eat like I did.
Well, now I have to ask, why don't doctors recommend plant-based diets more than they do? Because most of them are, I mean, and you know better than I do, most doctors are taught to prescribe medicines and cut you open. They don't talk about nutrition or anything like that. But in your opinion, why don't they do more of that?
Money. You know, this is how you make money: is you get a flock of patients, school of patients, a herd of patients. Yeah, you get 500,000 patients gathered together, and you get them hooked on drugs. You know, blood pressure pills, diabetic pills, and so on, and have them come back every 1 to 3 months for another ding in their pocketbook. It's an ideal situation for making lots of money. You know, hospitals stay open because they do things to people. Pharmacies, likewise, they sell drugs. So there's nobody interested in you being healthy. It doesn't fit in with the economic model that they live by. You know, if you were to seriously get healthy, and I used to believe this was a possibility when I first discovered this, if the world became healthy, what would happen to the drug companies? Your doctor would be driving a taxi cab. You know, it's the economics. It's just money. It's not a conspiracy. Nobody hates you. They just start making money.
Oh yeah, exactly. And when anytime I've ever addressed certain doctors about diet or about plant-based, they're always concerned. Well, you should take, you know, make sure you take your vitamin B12 and make sure you take, omegas and things like that. I'm like, yeah, but I can do that.
Yeah. Their knowledge, they have a little bit of knowledge, which is dangerous.
Which is just enough to be dangerous.
You know, I tried to correct that. I got frustrated as I've gotten many times in my career.
Sure.
And so in the year 2011, I was very instrumental in writing a bill. It's called SB 380. And you can look it up, SB 380 California. And this bill would require the 500 hospitals in California to have noontime conferences on diet. It would require the 11 medical schools to teach their students about food. What does a human being eat? It was passed unanimously by both houses in the spring of 2011. And Jerry Brown, who was our governor at that time, he signed it into law September of 2011. So there's a real problem up there, but there was so much pushback that it really never became an effective bill.
Even though it's law.
Yeah, even though it's law. I tell you, well, it's probably not worth going into the details. The California Medical Board, they were given the task of implementing the law. And so what they decided to do was by including a small paragraph every year in their newsletter. The newsletter comes out about once a month. A small paragraph on nutrition that they answered the law, and that's what they did. I got tired of fighting them.
Wow. Because again, it's not in the economics.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not in the economics. Now, should people focus on organic more than traditional?
Well, we encourage people to eat organic. We don't put a lot of emphasis on it because it just provides one more stumbling block. But Mary and I, we eat all organic food every chance we get. You know, at the very least, we're helping the farm workers. Mm-hmm. And these compounds, pesticides, organophosphates, and other chemicals, they cause cancer. And they promote cancer, and they cause neurologic disease. And they cause Parkinson's disease. If you look it up, you look up Parkinson's and pesticides, or organophosphates is what they are, you'll find, you know, maybe hundreds of articles about this. But they don't hit the viewer's radar because there's no reason to. I mean, what advertisement is going to put in the fact that when you eat up high on the food chain, you're taking a whole load of pesticides that'll give you Parkinson's disease?
Not a good marketing tool.
Buried information. It's just again, money.
Now, are there any plant-based foods that we should avoid?
Let's see. Well, there are poisonous, like poison ivy.
Yeah, things that you shouldn't like.
Yeah, but foods. You know, you pretty much can figure out what are poisons. We're designed as being able to select on our environment. Our taste buds are designed so that we avoid poisons. We have taste buds on the tip of the tongue for sugar, salt, and starch. We have taste buds for starch. And we have on the back of the tongue taste buds for bitter and sour. And that's the flavors of poisonous material, or best medicines. So you have a way of guarding yourself against poisons that was built into your system millions of years ago.
Fair enough. Now, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions I ask all of my guests. What is your mission in this life?
Well, you know, my mission used to be to give patients a fair shake. You know, if you want to go and you take these powerful anti-arthritis drugs that you choose to do, you ought to first know that you could fix the problem by changing your diet. Autoimmune diseases you fix, they're caused by an unhealthy diet. You know, if you decide you want to have bypass surgery, you ought to at least first know that your problem is reversible. And you need to know some of the hazards of bypass surgery. And you need to know that it doesn't save lives, for example. That'd be a nice piece of information to have. So after being fully informed about standard medical care, the patient ought to know that they can fix the problem by what they eat. This is proven over and over again through scientific research, which I've spent all my life trying to synthesize for you and put it together in various books and my website and newsletters I've sent out and opportunities like I have right now with you to talk to people.
Now, where
this
can
is, this is not controversial. This is not a matter of it being a whole bunch of science that you can't figure out what's going on because it's so controversial. It's not controversial. It's just controversial because the people, like, for example, the doctors, the scientists who are reading a paper that says eating this food will cause heart disease and cancer. And the doctor, the scientist says, as he or she shovels bacon and eggs in their mouth, they say, I'm confused. Mm. They can't see beyond their own dinner plate. That's the problem. Mm. Yeah.
Well, where can people find out more about your work and your books and what everything you're doing?
Well, we have a couple of websites. One is drmcdougall.com, where we offer this information for free.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Really, no gimmicks, for free. We've been offered it for 30 years for free. Mm-hmm. And you can go there, you get the recipes, you get a free program and so on. There's no gimmicks. I've written 13 national best-selling books, when most of them are still for sale because they've been big sellers. On the website, you can find a whole bunch of information on there based on newsletters that I've written. So that's one source, is drmcdougall.com. Now, those of you interested in my passion about the climate, first let me tell you that well over half of the greenhouse gases are caused by the agriculture industry, the animal agriculture businesses, and that you can reduce your contribution of greenhouse gases overnight by 80%. So because of this powerful tool, particularly a powerful tool that people say, what am I going to do? They read the IPCC report that says that we're doomed. And the person says, hey, I recycle, I drive a hybrid car. What can I do? Well, one person can change the world. And that's what my new website is about. It's about what one person could do to change the world. And it teaches, of course, the basic diet that calls, I call it a traditional diet, not the McDougall diet or vegan diet. I told you why. So the new website is McDougallFoundation.org, not .com, but McDougallFoundation.org. And you'll see our efforts. This is an ongoing project, but it's good enough for you to take a look at it. And it talks to you about the impact you can have. I mean, just think about it. Just think, and maybe this radio show we're doing together, podcast we're doing together, just think about, it's the, what do they call it, the 100th monkey. Finally we get the message across and people start saying, because customers, I'm not going to buy any more meat, poultry, fish are almost gone. I'm not going to buy any more fish. Right. Cheese is liquid meat. I'm not going to do that anymore. The economic impact would put these people out of business. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that could be done. I mean, it's a real possibility since nothing else is saving us. And the other thing is each time an individual changes to a starch-based diet, they reduce their contribution of greenhouse gases by as much as 80%.
Wow.
So that's where I'm focusing my attention these days, but I still work with the basic program. I still see patients. We take care of every month we run a program, and it's the best money and time you'll ever spend. I promise it.
Dr. McDougall,
you're tired of being sick and overweight. We can fix that. And we're so good at convincing people that I have a little doubt that you won't benefit tremendously. I've taken care of 12,000 patients in my career.
Wow.
So anyway.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I appreciate you doing the work that you do and trying to help not only people, but the planet as well. So thank you so much for all the years of hard work, my friend. And hopefully we can help get the word out a little bit.
Well, we need to join forces. We need to create an army. When I was a young man, we used to burn our draft cards when we marched in the street. Young people, where are you? Why aren't you in the street? Because you don't know. You think it's hopeless.
Right.
It's not hopeless. You come to my website, McDougallFoundation.org, and you'll see optimism. You won't hear about gloom and doom anymore. You'll see that you can do something, but we got to act.
Amen. I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
I want to thank Dr. McDougall for not only coming on the show and sharing his knowledge with all of us, but for his tireless work that he has done over the past 50 years trying to help people and get a better and brighter future, not only for the people of this planet, but for the planet itself. If you want to get links to any of Dr. McDougall's amazing resources, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/054. And if you've only been listening to this over podcast and you want to watch these amazing conversations, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at nextlevelsoul.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for listening, And remember, trust the journey. It is here to teach you. I'll talk to you soon.